The Asian Classics Institute presents A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in October of 1997. This is the beginning of Class 1.
Class on the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, written by Master Shantideva about 1,300 years ago. And this will be the 9th and the 10th chapters of the book. We've covered the first 8 chapters this year so far. This book is not even taught in the monastery. It's not part of the Geshe course, you know. It's not considered one of the 5 great books that's in the monastery. And normally a monk at Sera or one of the other monasteries, great monasteries, would study this on the side, like during visits by His Holiness the Dalai Lama or by, in the old days, by one of his 2 teachers. So why do we spend a whole year on it, you know? It's really perhaps the most important, one of the most important books of Buddhism, and it has survived since the early times of Buddhism, and people have, you know, millions of people have studied it, and it's a very, very important book. If you have to perhaps decide what's the most important chapter in the book, it's the 9th chapter. So you're about to study the most important chapter of one of the most important books ever written by man or whoever. So, it's a great honor to hear it, you know. It's very difficult to get to hear it. I think you remember the story that we told when Master Shantideva taught this particular chapter in the monastery. He started to rise off the throne that he was on, and only a few people even heard the end of the chapter. Only those people who could read his mind and who could follow him as he floated into the air away from the monastery, heard the 9th chapter. And there was this big argument about whether there was a 10th chapter or not. So you're about to hear the 9th and 10th chapter, and I promise not to fly away. although it's always a possibility. You have to get in your mind what's going on in this chapter. This chapter is about emptiness. It's about the meaning of emptiness. When you look back on your life, you know, when you get old, if you get old, okay, And when you look back on your life and you think about what happened in your life, if you can see emptiness directly in this life, which is about 20 minutes or something, it takes about 20 minutes. The real Tonglam, direct experience of emptiness on the path of seeing, it takes about 20 minutes of a human life. I think you can count that, and you can count your first experience of real bodhicitta, which takes less than that, takes maybe 5 minutes. And then you could count, if you ever have any tantric realizations, like of Kirim and Dzogrim, of the two levels of Tantra, they would take, a Kirim experience would take a few minutes, and a Dzogrim experience would take a little bit longer. But you could look back on your life after 60 or 70 years and say, those are the only times in my life that were important. You know, that few minutes in my life was the only important time in my life. The rest was just moving from one of those realizations to the other, you know, physically and in time. But if a Buddhist looks back on their life, at the end of their life, and if you can say, I've seen those things for half an hour or something, that's the only meaningful thing that ever happened in your life. You know, that's a very profound statement, you know, that when you look back on a whole human life from the time you were born, that those were the only really important things that happened. Those were the most important things that happened. And you can easily see that, and you can easily, compared to the rest of your life, make thousands, millions of times more important than all the other days of your life are those few minutes. And the whole purpose of being a Buddhist is to try to get to those few minutes, is to try to make those few minutes happen. If you can make them happen, you won't suffer anymore. If you can make the direct perception of emptiness happen in this life, you see your future lives, you know which life it will all end, you see your own enlightenment, you see the Buddha, and you see all of these things directly. You know them. And no one can ever convince you anything else. You know that you saw them. And that's the nature of that experience. And from then on, you will not have any major suffering. From the moment you see emptiness directly, there won't be any major bad thing happen to you in your entire existence ever again. Can't happen after that. You know, major problems. You'll get minor problems. You have to die like 6 more times. But that's all. And that's nothing. Okay? That's the power of that experience. If you reach a Kirim or Dzogrim, if you have those experiences, then you have the direct knowledge that in this life, very soon, you can become a complete Buddha, enter some kind of paradise. So really, those are all that matters in your life. The rest is just logistical support. You see what I mean? Eating, sleeping, friends, family, job, your body, your mind. Everything else is just conditions for those to happen. And they don't mean anything more than that. You know, if they can lead you to that experience, then they had some meaning. And if they can't, if you don't get to one of those experiences, they probably didn't have much meaning. Which is my pitch for coming to this class, okay? This class is for that. You know, the only reason for the 9th chapter is to try to get you to see emptiness directly. That's what you're here for. So, and it's very rare to hear the 9th chapter, and it's very rare to hear it explained at all. So, and the benefits are like that. So don't. It's not. You're not. This is not like one of those. They hand out those flyers around the city. I forget what they're called. Adult learning thing, annex thing, something like that. You know, like this is not like how to write a good movie script or a new yoga class or healthy living class. The point is not that. This, don't think of this as a class. I mean, we call it a class. It's not a class. If you get what's going to happen in the next 10 classes, you become a totally different kind of being on this planet, and you will, and because of that experience, you will not suffer in any major way again. Period. I mean, it's really like some kind of threshold in your life. If you can hear the ninth chapter, if you understand what it's about, and if it leads you to see emptiness directly, then you don't need anything else in the world, actually. And you can die happily. You know, and you will. So, don't miss one of these classes, okay? There's no other reason for your life, really. You know, there's nothing else in your life that matters, like emptiness. There isn't anything. Don't kid yourself, okay? And if you miss more than two, don't come, okay? That's a deal. I mean, there has to be a certain energy in this room, and it has to be that people are committed to learning emptiness and to seeing emptiness. So if you think you're going to miss more than two classes, then come on Friday night, and there's a little less energy, okay? But people in this room now, if you stay, don't miss classes, okay? And if you miss more than two, then as a point of honor, just stop and don't come. And come back on the Friday. You're welcome to come on Friday, okay? But there has to be a certain level of energy in this class and a certain level of commitment. If you miss more than that, it means you don't understand what we're talking about at all. You know, it means you don't get it. And probably you could come on Friday night and maybe in a few lifetimes you could get another chance, okay? All right? I'm not kidding, okay? It's a commitment. And I'm not saying it for my benefit, you know. I'm just saying that in your life there are things that happen. There are events that come in your lifetime, very special opportunities, compared to which you should cancel everything else, where other things just don't matter anymore. Even if they seem very, very important, if you really know what's going on, if you get that kind of event happening to you or that kind of opportunity, you should cancel everything and just do that. You know, if it happens that something like that comes close to you, you should grab the opportunity and not even hesitate and cancel the other things. Even if they're virtuous, even if they're Dharma things, if you have an opportunity to understand these few things in your life, if you have an opportunity to experience them in your life, then you should just cancel the other things, okay? All right? What does seeing emptiness do for you? What can it do for you? I'll read you the definition. Well, let me see. Fancy, huh? Okay. No more writing in my terrible handwriting. Now you have no excuse to make your handwriting better. Okay. Copy that. All the Tibetan I put up on the projector is on your homework, okay? So, if that adds any incentive. We'll get to it. By the way, this class is going to be a little tougher than the last one, okay? The ninth chapter is hard. And I saw G.I. Jane the other day, and I got inspired by the drill sergeant. And so I'm going to kick a little butt in this class. So you got to work hard, okay? And don't go home and think you're not going to work hard, okay? You have to work hard. And you'll learn something. Because if you don't work hard, you won't learn anything, all right? So I'm going to make you work hard, or you'll leave. They had this bell in the movie that you could ring if you were going to give up, you know. But okay. Say, Jin, Kangxi, Munsumdu, Tope, Chima, Sepa, Chepa. By the way, you can do this in Tibetan track or you can do it in English track. If you do it in Tibetan track, you have to memorize everything that goes up on the board, okay? And you should, okay? You really should try. If you want to, you can try to memorize just the English letters, all right? Until you get familiar with the Tibetan letters, all right? But you should really try, okay? If you're on the border and you don't know quite what to do, just do it, okay? You have a lot better chance of seeing emptiness in this life if you can learn Tibetan and read all the other scriptures about it, okay? Much better chance. It's not just for fun, and I don't care about, intellectually, I don't care. You know, if there were hundreds of lamas in the United States who could explain these things in English, and if all the books were already translated, it wouldn't matter. But there's only about 10 good translations on this subject. There's probably 10,000 books that exist on this subject. You got to learn Tibetan. Don't be lazy. Just do it. Especially the people who are administering this class, okay? Who say, I don't have to learn that because I'm making the announcements, or I'm doing the Xeroxing, or I help set up the altar. Forget it. You know, of all the people here, you should be the best, okay? You should work the hardest. It means you're going to get a little less sleep for 6 weeks or something, okay? It's no big deal. You will regret it later if you don't do it. These classes will not last forever. You know, we are very lucky right now. We have a place. We all have a human body that didn't die yet. You're very lucky. These will not go on forever. So you have to take the chance when you have it, okay? Dun means, in this case, it means that thing, that object. Normally, it means meaning. Kong Shik means which, that object which, Kong Shik. Ngun Sum Tu Topa. Ngun Sum Tu Topa means if you perceive it directly. Ngun Sum Tu means directly. Ngun Sum Tu. Topa means to realize it or perceive it. Tokpe, by that perception. Chima means all impurities, everything impure. Meaning your mental afflictions, jealousy, hatred, anger, desire, are called impurities. And also, eventually, the obstacle in your mind that prevents you from being a Buddha. Okay? There's an obstacle in your mind that prevents you from being a Buddha. If you can remove that impurity, you'll be able to see all the objects in the universe at one moment, in one moment. You'll be able to see everything in the universe. And you'll be able to appear anywhere in the universe that you want to appear. Okay? And that chima, meaning impurity, is also removed. Chima means impurity. Sepa means, I translate it as finished off, like completely finished. Okay? Completely finished. Sepa chepa means, it functions to do that. It does that. It does that thing. So how should you translate this in English? I'll try to do it the way I did it. That object which is such that, that object which is such that, if you realize it directly, it allows you to finish off every impurity, okay? It's the object which, if you realize it directly, allows you to finish off all your impurities, okay? That object is emptiness, okay? Another word for emptiness is ultimate reality. Ultimate reality. You can only perceive it directly in a deep, deep state of meditation with a lot of training, okay? And the whole experience of perceiving it directly, it takes, in this lifetime, for example, it could take like 20 years to get ready, and then you see it. You know, seeing it takes about 20 minutes in deep meditation. But if you can make contact with that reality, it's a separate reality. It's a different reality. It's a higher reality, okay? If you can make contact with that reality, it will stop in you every impure thing. You won't, eventually it will stop your mortal body. You won't have to die anymore. It will stop your bad thoughts even before that. You will not ever be able to have jealousy anymore. You won't be able to get upset anymore. You won't be able to have a bad day or an unhappy thought. Impossible. Totally impossible. But the only way to do those things is to make contact with this higher reality. Ultimate reality. Emptiness. It's a higher reality. And to have any hope of reaching those things, you must make contact with it. You must see it directly. Okay? If you see it directly, if you make contact with it before you die, these things will start to happen. You know, your mental afflictions, your bad thoughts, your bad emotions will start to disappear one by one. Get less and less and less and then finally finish. Eventually, the body itself will start to change into a higher body, okay? Into a body of light. That's all triggered by making contact with this thing. What does it mean to make contact with it? You know, do you touch it or something like that? No. In meditation, you make contact with it with your mind. With your mind, you make contact with ultimate reality. Just doing that for 20 minutes has the effect that for the next 7 lifetimes, you can remove all of your bad thoughts, all of your suffering, and if you practice Tantra, in this lifetime, you can remove all those things. Okay? In this lifetime, you can remove all those bad parts of your mind, and also your very body will start to change. And your body will change into a different body. And your world will change into a higher world. Okay? And that's all made possible by making contact with this object. Okay? And that's the definition. I mean, that's a description of ultimate truth, ultimate reality. That thing which, if you make contact with it, every impure part of your being will be changed. Okay? So you must make contact with that. It's only 20 minutes. It's really weird. You know? 20 minutes in the presence of this object is enough to put you on the path, in the stream. It's called stream enterer. It's enough to you to enter the stream. And then you're on your way out. It's like on a conveyor belt or something. You don't have a choice, actually. From that moment on, you're on your way out. Okay? And that's the direct perception of emptiness. This is the quality of ultimate reality. This is the quality of emptiness. Okay? How does it do it? Okay? How does it function that way? What happens after you see emptiness directly? Okay? That happens to be the first homework question. Say jikta. Jikta. Jik means destruction. Destroyable. Ta means view. Viewpoint. It's a way of looking at your world. Okay? It's a way of looking at your world. It's called the view of destruction. The view of destruction. Okay? What is it focusing upon? If your name is Helen McHale, it's focusing on Helen McHale. Me and mine. Okay? It's focusing on me and mine. Okay? It's focusing on Helen McHale and Helen McHale's arm, Helen McHale's legs, Helen McHale's mind, Helen McHale's etc. Okay? The 5 heaps of Helen McHale. Okay? So it's either focusing on you or your parts. Me or mine. Okay? And what is it thinking about those parts? It's thinking those parts exist, and this is difficult, okay? Without my perceptions. They don't depend on my perceptions. They are not my projections. I am not creating this me and mine. They exist out there on their own. They are not totally dependent on my own mind. Okay? They have an existence of their own, even if my mind wasn't there. Okay? They exist out there on their own, whether or not I'm thinking about them. They exist out there on their own, whether or not I'm organizing them in a certain way. Okay? No matter what I think about them, they would exist in any case. That's false. Okay? And jikta, the view of destruction, is looking at those things and thinking, oh, they exist out there on their own, independent of my mind. Okay? Independent of my thoughts. Independent of my projections. They exist out there on their own. Okay? That's the ultimate meaning of jikta. Why is it called view of destruction? There's 2 interpretations in the scripture. One says, what is it focusing on? Me and mine. Which is very destruction. Okay? You're going to die. Okay? Me and mine is going to die. Okay? However attached you are to your arm and your hand, you know, whether you like them, whether they're wrinkly and hairy or or, you know, whatever, you're going to lose them. They're going to be destroyed. Okay? That's one meaning of view of destruction. What's the other meaning? The view itself is what? Destroyable. Thank goodness, right? I mean, you can destroy this viewpoint. You can destroy this way of looking at things, and then you'll be liberated. Okay? Why? This way of looking at things is the first link in the wheel of life. When you see that picture of the wheel of life and there's these two blind guys walking along, ignorance. Ignorance which causes suffering. The ignorance which causes every bad thing in your existence. From a taxi cab that you don't like up to your wife or whatever. You know, from the smallest thing up to the heaviest suffering you have, the suffering of cancer or AIDS or something like that. Every version of suffering, mental and physical, is caused by this way of looking at things. Okay? It's all caused by thinking that about you or yours, your parts. Okay? Why? It has mainly to do with feeling. Okay? It has mainly to do with your feelings. The most important part of your body that causes trouble, the most important part of your mind that causes trouble, is your feelings. I like this. This feels good. I don't like this. This doesn't feel good. And in order to get the things that you like, you hurt somebody. In order to avoid the things that you don't like, you hurt somebody. Because you think that's the way to get what you want. Which is not true. Okay? It's not true. But it's human nature. As long as you believe that this arm exists out there on its own, independent of your mind, you will believe that if you hurt someone, you can get what you want. That you can get what you want by hurting someone. I can get rid of the roaches in my apartment if I kill them. That's like a classic wrong view. Okay? The way to get rid of roaches in my apartment is to kill them. You know, that's like a classic wrong view. Okay? Can you get rid of them by killing them? No. Will they appear to go away for a while? Yes. Is killing them what made them go away? No. Will they come back again? Of course, you killed them. You know what I mean? Or worse, okay? How does that all work? We have to talk about it. Okay, we'll talk about it. But when you do a bad deed to take care of this arm, a seed is planted in your mind. And then that seed grows into a new roach, okay? The idea of a new roach. Seriously, no kidding, okay? You have these feelings about you want your apartment clean, you know? So you kill these things, which is a bad deed, because you think that's how you get rid of them. And then the bad deed of doing that, of killing, of harming another being, is planted in your mind. And that causes you to see them again, okay? If you didn't think that way, if you stopped thinking that way, then you can stop your suffering. And you can stop your bad thoughts, okay? Bad thoughts, stopping the bad thoughts is called nyangde. Say nyangde. Nyangde. Nyangde is an abbreviation for the Tibetan word for grief. Grief. Like if your mother died, the feeling that you would have is called nyang. Okay? Nyang means grief. De means to go beyond that, to overcome that. So nyangde means to overcome your grief. It's the Tibetan word for nirvana. Okay? This is the Tibetan word for nirvana. Nyangde. Let's run by again the connection between jikta, this worldview about this destroyable thing, and nyangde, nirvana. How do you go from seeing this arm as self-existent, out there on its own, how do you get to nirvana from there? Okay? What's the connection? And you have to understand that, okay? Jikta is the idea that this arm and the roaches in my apartment exist outside of my thoughts, outside of my projections. It is not put out there by my mind. They really exist. If I went to Kansas tomorrow, those roaches would still be there, okay? If I died, those roaches would still be there. If all the beings in the world died, they would still be there. Okay, they exist outside of my projections. Okay, that's a wrong view. They are in my apartment because somebody put food somewhere, Or they're in my apartment because the guy next door is using poison and they're all running over to my house. Or they're in my apartment because my stupid friend used to leave sandwiches around the house and stuff like that. That's not why they're in your apartment, okay? That helps them get there. But the reason there's a sandwich, and the reason your friend is using poison, and the reason they decided to stay in your apartment is because you hurt something like that before, and now you have to suffer from them. Okay, it's very interesting. Okay, Jikta says those roaches came because of all those things. Wisdom says, yeah, they came because of those things, but who made the sandwich? Why did the guy eat the sandwich in my apartment? You know, and who made the roaches in the first place? How come there are roaches in New York? You know, they don't exist in, like, I was in L.A. I guess the part of L.A. I was in, they don't exist, okay? Why? You know, why they exist in one big city and not in another big city? It's warmer out there, actually. Okay? I mean, why? You know? Because they're coming from your mind. They're a production of your mind. How that works, we'll talk about. Okay? But when you stop thinking that these things are self-existent, you will stop killing the roaches. Because you'll see that it's a projection coming from your mind. And if you want more roaches, the best way to get them is kill them. Okay? Seriously. If you don't see that, you don't get it yet. Okay? By the way, what would happen about everything? Like, for example, what's the best way to get money? Give it away. Okay? That plants seeds in your mind that in the future you see more money. Okay? It works. It's infallible. It's called milua. Later, okay? I'll catch you before the break. Okay? How to get money? Give it away. How to get rid of your roaches? Protect them. Okay? Rinpoche, our teacher, we had roaches, okay? Every night, he would wake up at 1 a.m., he would go and put them in a cup carefully and take them outside. For a year, you know, we have never had a roach in the house again. Seriously, you know, we had it very bad, you know. It's by protecting them that you get rid of them. It's very interesting, okay? It's by loving your enemy that you can destroy him. All right, if you don't like an enemy, then just be nice to him. And he'll go away or he'll become your friend. Okay, it's very nice. It's very nice. But by hurting them, you create more of them. Okay, so if you get it, that's the emptiness. If you get that those things are coming from your mind, once you get it, you'll be able to get over your jikta, your view of destruction. And then you stop doing bad deeds. And when you stop doing bad deeds, your world cleans up. Your reality cleans up. Your body changes. You become healthier, happier. You meet, fewer bad things happen to you, and eventually you enter a Buddha paradise. So that's the connection. If you can destroy this stupid mind that says, all these things exist outside of my mind, okay? If you can destroy that and go to the other side that says, these things are coming from my own deeds, what I did in the past, you know, this arm is being created by my good deeds or my bad deeds, then you can really make some progress. And then you can get rid of your bad thoughts and you reach nirvana. And then you can eventually reach Buddhahood itself, enter a Buddha paradise. The arm will change. If you're very, very holy with your life, then the arm itself will start to change. And you won't be like this anymore. You won't be stupid in the head and you won't be dead in the body. Okay? Seriously. And that's the whole idea of Buddhism. Buddhism is not to make you feel calm while you're dying. Okay? Buddhism is not to, you know, go around with a happy face when the car hits you. You know, it's not that. It really isn't that. It's to stop all those things, okay, permanently, forever. And you won't be in a world like that anymore. And that's why we're here. Okay, so that's the connection between seeing things as self-existent, seeing things as existing on their own side, and getting to nirvana, and getting to Buddhahood. Okay, that's the connection. That's your first homework question, okay? How do you get rid of this destruction view of destruction? See emptiness. Understand the emptiness of this thing. Okay, what happens when you get rid of that? You can clean up your mind and then eventually clean up your body. And you won't suffer anymore, okay? And clean up, by the way, you clean up all of New York, etc. Okay, the whole geographical environment that you live in will change, okay? And that's the point. That is G.I. Jane stuff. Let's see here. Okay. The opening lines of the ninth chapter. By the way, this chapter gets hard, okay? And just hang in there. In Tibet, in the monasteries, there's a custom. We go to class, you know, 3-4 hours a day, and then we go debate. And the debate is like, you know, and it goes like that, you know. And if you don't know Tibetan, it's like, you know, and even if you know Tibetan, I mean, there was this Tibetan guy who called the police and said, those monks are fighting, you know, out at Sarah, you have to come quick, you know. And it's just, they're shooting questions at you like that. And in the classes, it's about the same. But there's a custom in Tibet that you just sit there. And even if you have no idea what's going on, you sit there and you ask for a blessing. You know, the words have a blessing. Someone is talking about that object, which if you perceive it directly, you stop all suffering for yourself and other people. Someone's talking about that. So just sit there. You know, and people sit in those classes. You know, you can sit in the winter debates. There's lots of people sitting there, you know, and they have no idea what's going on. But after about a year or two, you get it, you know, and then you understand everything, you know. So what I'm saying is, don't get discouraged. This chapter is profound. It's a deep chapter. Hang in there, okay? I don't care if you get 48s on your homeworks. You don't get thrown out of this class for failing your homeworks, really. So stick in there. You'll learn a lot of things. If it wasn't profound, it wouldn't be so interesting, okay? If it wasn't a little difficult, it wouldn't be so powerful. It's very powerful, and it's a little difficult. So hang in there, okay? Get the blessing, okay? All right. By the way, the first thing that I mentioned about Nirvana, there were some people in Tibet in the time, well, actually in the time of Shantideva, Master Shantideva also, who said, you don't have to see emptiness to get to Nirvana. You need it to get to Buddhahood, but you don't need it to get to Nirvana. What's the difference between Buddhahood and Nirvana? When you get to Buddhahood, your mind can see every existing object. Your body changes completely into a body of light. And you can appear in any planet in the world simultaneously, next to anyone you want to, on any bus, on any planet. You can appear there, you know. So you never know who's next to you on the subway, okay? I mean, a Buddha, part of the point of getting to be a Buddha is that you can appear sitting next to, I mean, everyone who ever sat next to you on a bus in your life could have been a Buddha emanation. You don't know. But when you become a Buddha, you get this ability to do these things, okay? That's a lot different from Nirvana. Nirvana is the point at which you are able to stop all your negative emotions. You don't have any more negative emotions. That's Nirvana. Okay? But both of them require one step before that. What's that? You must make direct contact with ultimate reality. You must make direct contact with ultimate reality. Okay? So there were people in Gyaltsep Jay's time. The book we're studying was written by Gyaltsep Jay, student of Jetsun Kapa. And they said, oh, you need to see emptiness directly to become a Buddha, but you don't need to see it directly to reach Nirvana. And he said, come on, you need that power. You cannot remove your anger forever or your jealousy forever unless you see emptiness directly. It's impossible. By the way, this is coming from a guy who just gave you about 8 chapters of why these little tricks you can use to try to help remove your anger. And then when you get to the 9th chapter, he says, by the way, they don't work. Okay? You know, like you can reduce your anger, you can reduce your jealousy, but until the time you make direct contact with ultimate reality, there's no hope. You cannot remove anger and your other negative emotions. Okay, that's Nirvana. Okay, that's why we went through how to remove the view of destruction, because when you do, you can reach Nirvana. Okay, you can reach Nirvana. You need it. You need to remove that to reach Nirvana, and you must see emptiness directly to do that, to remove the view of destruction. That's the connection, okay? The next lines in the 9th chapter say, Yenla dida tamche du tupe shirab dundu sum, which means all of these things that came before were said by the Buddha to be for the sake of wisdom. I'll repeat that, okay? The opening lines of the 9th chapter say, All of this stuff that came before was spoken by the Buddhas for the sake of wisdom. Okay, what came before? I mean, basically, wisdom is number six of what? The six perfections. Okay, six ways in which bodhisattvas act. Okay, six activities of all bodhisattvas. What are they quickly? Giving. Yeah, giving, like generosity. Ethical way of life. You know, following a good way of life. Patience, which means not getting angry. Joyful effort, which means you like to do good things. Okay? Like you're happy when you get a chance to do good things. Okay? Fifth one? Meditation. Call it meditation. Okay? Those are the five perfections that come before wisdom. And those six are the activities of a bodhisattva. That's what this book is about. That's how you get to be a Buddha. Okay, we'll say them again. Giving, ethical way of life, not getting angry, being happy to do good things, and then meditation. You need those five. So many Tibetan, there was a debate, even since India, what do these opening lines mean when it says everything that came before is for the sake of wisdom? And then some people said, oh, it's referring to chapter 8. What was the subject of chapter 8? Meditation. Deep meditation. Okay. Why is that a good answer? Yeah. You cannot see emptiness directly. You cannot make that direct contact with ultimate reality. Which, if you can do it for 20 minutes in this life, everything's over. You know, you're a stream enterer. Everything is set. You know, you can't screw up after that. You know, life is perfect after that. You know everything about your future. You see it directly. If you can just do that for 20 minutes, you must, though, to see emptiness directly, to make direct contact with that object, you must be able to get into a deep state of meditation. You must be able to get into this state of meditation. Okay, that's why it makes sense to say the ninth chapter, the opening lines, are talking about the fact that you must have chapter 8 to get to chapter 9. Okay, which means, by the way, if you don't meditate about an hour or two a day, you will never make contact with ultimate reality. And you will just die like all the other people in the world are dying. Okay, hopeless, helpless, dying. If Buddhism is wrong, you just die. Okay, if Buddhism is right, you die and then you go to much worse things. Okay? And very, very long time. Okay? So that's the choice you have. You know, either make contact with ultimate reality or just die a normal death. How do you make contact? You must be in deep meditation. How do you get in deep meditation? You must practice about an hour or two a day. People come up to me to, you know, is it okay if I don't meditate today? You know? Well, yeah, if you want to die like that, I don't care, you know, it's fine, you know. Do I have to do my confession book today, you know? Can I just skip the rest of the day? Yeah, you know, if you just want to die like that, that's your privilege, right? That's your right. Everybody has the right to suffer. Everybody has the right to die. You know, that's your inalienable right, right? I can't tell you, not to suffer. If you want to suffer, suffer, you know. Don't meditate tonight, you know. Or wait till it's too late so you have a lousy meditation, you know. That's your right. But it's a stupid question, right? Anyway, the other commentators have said, no, we're talking about the other five perfections. The opening lines of the ninth chapter mean you must have the other five perfections before you get to wisdom. Okay, the Buddha taught, the Buddha stated that the other five were for the sake of reaching wisdom. Okay, so those are two ways of interpreting it. Isn't way number one correct? Does it make sense? Yeah, it does. And Gyaltsen Jay says, not too bad. You could do it that way. Which is a Mayingat. What's that Mayingat? He's saying, but the second way is better. Okay, when you say not too bad, it means, well, the second way is better, which means the opening lines of the ninth chapter mean the whole spiel that Master Shantideva gave up to this point was for the sake of getting you to wisdom. Okay, why did I talk about all these perfections for this year, because I'm trying to get you to the perfection of wisdom. Okay? Now you get into a debate, and we'll do that debate, and then we'll take a break. Now people have said, therefore, Master Shantideva thinks that you have to practice the other five perfections to see emptiness directly. Okay? To perceive emptiness or to understand emptiness, you must see the other five perfections. You must have the other five perfections come before. Because they say, Master Shantideva is saying you can't get to number six unless you do the other five. Unless you are generous, unless you live a good life, unless you don't get angry, unless you are happy about doing good things, and unless you have deep meditation, you can't get to number six. You can't have any understanding of emptiness. Is that correct? Whoa, okay. Some people say yes, some people say no. Here's the answer. Jetsun Kapa used to have a memorizing contest with his friends. And I think he did like, I don't remember exactly, I think it was 100 pages one night. And so you can do a few lines, right? By the way, this is the longest one. You just happened to hit it early, okay? So don't get scared, all right? You can't really leave till the break anyway if you're polite, so. Again, you don't have to do it in Tibetan. You can do it in English, all right? What I used to do in debating was I just pick out the main points. I forget all the to and it and thus, you know. You can reduce it to about four words that you really have to remember, okay? And if you find this class is too demanding for you, come on Friday night, okay? But I don't want to water the class down, okay? I want to make it a little G.I. Jane, right? And you can do it. Okay, ready? Not quite. Okay, say Lopan. Lopan means, it's what I've been calling master. It's acharya in Sanskrit. It means master. Master scholar, master saint, master meditator. Okay, Lopan. Master. Shitso means shantarakshita. I'll spell it for you. Shantarakshita. Very famous Indian master of Buddhism. Okay. He talked about whether or not the five perfections have to come before you can understand emptiness. Okay? So we're quoting him. This is his position. Master Shantarakshita Tar means he said, according to him, Dongyi means what? Emptiness. Ultimate reality, same thing. Okay? Dongbanyi, Dongyi, ultimate reality. Tersam are the first two thirds of the process called Tersam Gom. So I'd like to repeat it, okay? Ter, Sam, Gom, Sum. Ter, Sam, Gom, Sum. Ter means going to class and hearing about emptiness. Ter means to hear. To learn. Learning. Okay. Even if after the 10th class of this course, you intellectually understand everything I talked about, which is unlikely. Okay. It's not enough. Tuh has to happen over and over and over again. Throughout your life, every few months, you should be trying to get into a class about emptiness. Okay? You should go again and again and again and again. Our heads are made of wood, and it takes a certain amount to sink in. Okay? And this is recognized in Buddhist teaching theory. You know, it takes a certain number of hours for it to reach the subconscious. You know, for it to really reach the inner core of your being, you have to hear it, frankly, several thousand hours of it. Okay? The tuh is very difficult. It takes a lot of time. You have to sit there and sit there and sit there, and you have to hear it explained correctly and accurately many, many hours. And then it will sink into your mind. That's called te. Say sam. Sam means contemplating it. It means going home and thinking about it intellectually. You're on the bus, or you're about to kill a roach in your house, like the roaches are getting really bad, and you remember this guy. He says, wait, what was he talking about? And why did he say that? And is it true or not? And what, you know, you start wondering about it and thinking about it. That's sam. Sam means contemplation. Thinking about what you te, what you heard. Okay? Gom, which is coming up later, it's not here, okay? Gom means meditation. Like you actually go into a state of meditation and you try to see emptiness, either directly or indirectly, okay? Can you perceive emptiness before the day that you make direct contact with it? Yeah. You did, while I was talking about it just now, during the last hour, you've had certain intellectual understandings of emptiness. You perceived emptiness intellectually, very fuzzy, very dark, very incorrectly, but you perceived it. Okay? I mean, you had, when I say the word emptiness and I talk about, is my arm out there, you understood something. You have some kind of mental image about emptiness. Okay? And when you go home and tonight and think about it, or the next time you kill a roach or something, you'll have another perception of emptiness. You'll start to understand it more. Those are perceptions of emptiness. Is it the direct contact that takes you to nirvana and Buddhahood directly, fast? No. Because that said munsum. That said directly. That has to be direct. That has to be direct contact and deep meditation. But here we're not talking about that. Ki means by the process of learning and contemplation. Tenla Bepa is a fancy word for establish or to gain a clear understanding of something. Okay? You're able to gain a clear understanding about emptiness. Jinsok means giving and the other four perfections, right? Those first five. So Jinsok means giving and the other four, the first five perfections. Nga means what? Five. Nga means five. Okay. Ngundudro means they come before. They come before. Migu means they don't have to. Okay, this is Master Shantarakshita's position, and it's also accepted by all the great lamas since then, and all the great lamas before that. Excuse me. You don't have to do generosity. You don't have to be bodhisattva moral. You don't have to be perfectly avoiding anger. You don't have to be perfectly joyful about good deeds, and you don't have to be perfectly meditating as a bodhisattva activity to get an intellectual understanding about emptiness. I mean, anyone could come in this room, and if they had half a brain, they could understand something about emptiness tonight. So you don't have to. They don't have to go before for you to have a general understanding about emptiness. Okay? That's the first reason why those five do not have to go before you understand emptiness, generally speaking. Okay? I'm going to give you two more reasons. On your homework, there's three. Okay? You have to give three reasons. The first reason why you don't need those other five perfections to see emptiness is that just to hear about it and to think about it, you don't have to be a great, generous person or anything like that. Do you have to collect good deeds? Do you have to collect good karma? Forget it. I mean, for you to be in this room tonight and to hear the word emptiness from someone's mouth, even if they were totally crazy, if there was some crazy man who came in here and yelled, emptiness, 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 for you to hear that word emptiness puts you above a million other people in the United States tonight. You have more good karma. Each person in this room has more good karma than about a million other people tonight. To hear the word emptiness come from someone's mouth, you have more good karma already than about a million other people in America tonight. Period. Okay? Of course you need good karma to understand emptiness. But you don't have to have those extraordinary bodhisattva activities. That's the point. Okay? You just need a few million years of good deeds. Okay? Which you all have. Okay? And which can wear out, you know, about the time it takes the air to go between the holes here. It's a miracle that the air continues to go through these two little holes. If you think about it, like for 40 years or 30 years, the air has managed to go through these holes a couple of times every minute. It's amazing. Okay? It doesn't take anything to stop it. Okay? The karma could wear out any minute. Okay? Somebody could choke on a cookie during the break, which will be in about 2 minutes, okay? Hope you don't. We don't have insurance for that. Okay. We'll do one more and we'll do the third one after the fatal cookies. Okay. I promise this is the longest part of the homework. Okay. You're probably thinking to yourself, if he keeps up this way, I'm probably going to have to spend 4 or 5 hours studying this. That's right. Okay. All right. I'm trying to get you more to. All right. I'm trying to force you to... I'm trying to wrest away from you your New York Times time and stuff like that. So give up something for 6 weeks, okay? New York Times is a good choice. Okay. Stuff like that. Couple movies. I studied Sanskrit. I was an auditor. There were 60 people in the class, and 3 of us were auditing. And the professor got up and said, I've been in this university my whole life, since I was 17, and now I'm 64 and a half. And now I'm going to teach it the way I always wanted to teach it, because they can't kick me out now. And he made us memorize many verses. And at the end, there were 3 people left. And it was the 3 auditors. You know. Say, Tong Ni La, Yi Gyurwe, Nyongwa, Kiewa, La Ang, Ngundu, Draw, Migu. Okay. Dong Ni means emptiness. We had it before. Okay. Dong Ni means emptiness. Dong Ni La means about emptiness. La means about. Ying Gyurwe Nyongwa is a very difficult word. Okay. Yi Gyurwe Nyongwa. Yi means mind. Gyur means it changes your mind, and Nyongwa means an experience. Okay? It means a deep understanding and experience of emptiness. A deep spiritual understanding and experience of emptiness, but not direct. Okay? It's where a deep understanding and a deep conviction in emptiness. But not yet a direct perception. Not yet that direct contact. Like it's just that you have a very, very deep understanding of it. So deep that you're certain about it and you know it's true. Something like that. But you haven't yet made direct contact with it. Like your mind's been transformed by your understanding of it. And you have a deep conviction of it. About it. You understand it very deeply. But you haven't yet made direct contact with it. Okay? Yin gyuren yongwa. Kyewa la. Kyewa means to develop that. La'ang means for that also. And then the rest is the same as the last one. The rest is the same. Mundu dro mi gu means those 5 do not have to come before. Okay? For you to have a profound conviction, a profound understanding, a spiritual understanding of emptiness, they do not have to come before. Okay? You do not have to engage in those bodhisattva activities before. Okay. We'll do number 3. It's real short. Kachushor Mendoa. Kachushor. What's Kachushor? Yeah, anybody salivating? No. Okay. Okay, say Nyenra. Ki. Tongyi. Tope. Gomchung. Ki. Faktong. Yang. Ke. Okay. Nyenrang means two kinds of lower level Buddhist practitioners that have not reached Bodhisattva track yet. They are not interested in the Bodhisattva track yet. Okay, Hinayana. They are, Nyen means listen. These are people who can listen to all this stuff about saving all sentient beings. And they can even report it to others, but they can't do it themselves, so they're called Nyen. Nyen means they can listen, listeners. They're not interested in saving all people yet, but they want to be a good Buddhist. Okay? And they can reach Nirvana, and they can see emptiness. Okay? But they can't reach Buddhahood yet. Okay? That's called Nyen. Shravaka in Sanskrit. Rang means self-made Buddhas. They're not self-made and they're not Buddhas, but they're called self-made Buddhas. These are also people on a lower track who want to reach Nirvana, but they're not interested in saving all sentient beings yet. Okay? Why are they called self-made Buddhas? They don't have a teacher in this life. They're running off the good karma of their past life of meeting millions of teachers before. In this life, without a direct teacher, they can achieve their goals. What is their goal? Just Nirvana. They're not interested in helping all sentient beings, okay? Necessarily, okay? Tongyi Tokpa means they do perceive emptiness. How? Gomchung. Gomchung means through that third step in the learning process. What was the first step? Hearing a lot in class. Many, many hours. What was the second step? Thinking about it when you get home. Okay. What was the third step? Meditating on it. Now we got to the third step. These people have a meditational understanding of emptiness. Okay. They are perceiving emptiness in meditation. Okay. They have a thing called Phlaktong. Phlaktong means one of the highest developments of wisdom, where we had the definition in the last class, but it's a very great understanding and perception of emptiness. It means special vision, special insight. Okay, Phlaktong. Phlaktong, Yangke means even they can develop that. Okay, what's the point? What's the point of this third one? Even people who have no interest in saving all other beings, they don't care about Bodhisattva stuff, they can see emptiness. Okay, they can see emptiness. Now, what are these three statements trying to prove? What were they again? Let's go through the three, and then I really will let you have a cookie. Somebody came up and said, "What? You can't see emptiness unless you do those other five perfections. You can't, okay? Unless you are great at giving, morality, etc. Bodhisattva way, you can't see emptiness." And Master Shantideva says, wrong on three counts. Wrong on three counts. First of all, any fool that walked in this room and had ears could hear what I'm saying, and they do perceive emptiness, although not directly. They get a very fuzzy idea of what emptiness means. A. And that's following the idea of Shantirakshita. Secondly, what was the second one? Because I don't remember. Huh? Say again? Oh, yeah, you can even have a very deep understanding. I mean, not just be a schmuck off the street, you know. You can be a very dedicated Dharma student, have a deep, deep understanding of emptiness. It's so much that you're convinced of its truth and your mind has changed completely. But even then, you don't need to have the five perfections of a Bodhisattva for that. You can do it without it, okay? Although you need other virtue. And thirdly, you can be on a completely other track. You can be on a Hinayana track. You don't care about saving all sentient beings. But you can see emptiness directly. They see emptiness directly, and they don't practice all the perfections, okay? What's that mean? It means the opening lines of the ninth chapter. By the way, we're 2 lines out of 100 pages we finished, okay? We're making great progress. When they say, the Buddha said all those other things were for the sake of wisdom, was he talking about the five perfections? Not if you take wisdom to just be the direct perception of emptiness. You don't need the other five perfections to see emptiness directly. Okay? You don't need to be a bodhisattva to see emptiness directly. You can do it without it. So what's he mean? We'll do that after the break. Okay? Okay, so take a break, like 10 minutes. We're going to run till 9:30, so just get used to it, okay? After you finish writing this, we'll do something else. Now, I still have to give you the punchline from the last one, right? So why did the opening line say that all that came before was spoken to be for wisdom? And Master Shantideva and Gyaltsep Jay say, look, we're talking about the wisdom of a Buddha. We're talking about omniscience. We're talking about the ability to close your eyes and see every existing object in the universe in one moment that ever was, is, or will be. That's pretty cool. Okay? To close your eyes and to be able to see every thought that every being ever had, is having now, or will have, to see everything that ever existed or will exist, or that exists now, in one moment, to be able to do that is the Buddha state of mind. That's an enlightened state of mind. Now, if you want to get that, you have to have the other five perfections. Okay? And that's the point. Okay? You can get rid of your mental afflictions, you can get rid of your jealousy, desire, etc., without those five perfections. But you cannot reach that state of mind, which is called the ending of the obstacles to omniscience. Okay? You have in your mind now some kind of block, mental block. Your mind is capable of perceiving every object in the universe, but it has some kind of block right now. When you practice those five perfections and get to wisdom, you can remove that block. It's very cool. It's very interesting. You know, every mind sitting in this place has the ability to see everything in the universe, but something's blocking you. Okay, there's a mental block that you have. To remove that block, you must practice those five and then practice the perfection of wisdom. And that's what Master Shantideva meant when he said the other five have to, all of the other five are aimed at getting number six. You see? The other five are aimed at getting number six in the form of omniscience. By the way, is a Buddha omnipotent? No way. Prove it. I'm suffering. Okay? It doesn't take anything more than that. Oh, but he could be a sadist, right? Right? I mean, I'm suffering, he could stop it, but he doesn't stop it. You know, which is ridiculous. Buddhas also have all compassion. So if the Buddha were omnipotent, I wouldn't be suffering. If I am suffering, it means the Buddha can't do everything. Does that mean the Buddha doesn't know everything? Not at all. The Buddha does know everything. The Buddha can't do everything. Okay? Because your suffering was created by your bad deeds. And it's a projection coming from your mind, not his mind or her mind. So it's up to you to stop it. And he can't, or she can't. She can help you, he can help you, but they can't do it for you. Okay? Or they would have already, and we wouldn't be here in New York City in 1997 with all the unpleasant things here, you know? Okay? It just wouldn't exist. Alright? Alright. Having introduced the concept of emptiness, now Master Shantideva will start to teach you how to see it directly, which is the whole point of this class. To see it directly, you have to first get in your mind, and this is your meditation assignment for this week. It's on your homework, okay? You have to be able to see in your mind roughly what is ultimate reality and what is not ultimate reality. You have to see in your mind, you have to be able to close your eyes and say, okay, ultimate reality probably looks like that. Have you seen it directly yet? Maybe not. Do you even understand it very clearly? Maybe not. But roughly, I think ultimate reality must be like that. And then the opposite must be like something else. You know? So mentally, this week, your assignment, you know, is to try to in your mind divide between, oh, this is probably ultimate reality and this is the other reality. Okay? The lower reality. Okay? The lower reality is called Kunzop. Say Kunzop. Kunzop. By the way, these are the two lines that come next, and these are where Master Shantideva explains the two realities. Okay? He starts to talk about the two realities. One of them is called Kunzop. You have been in Kunzop reality your whole life. Okay? Unless you are a very high being, unless you have seen emptiness directly, and I don't know who in this room has seen emptiness directly. Okay? I can't tell by looking at your face if you've seen emptiness directly. You have to be careful, okay? But if you're not one of those people, okay? No, what I said was that from their description of the experience, you can tell if you've already seen it yourself, you can tell with certainty if they've seen it or not. If they talk for 2 minutes and they're not describing certain things, it's definite that they didn't see emptiness directly. Okay? If you've seen it directly, you could interview them and if they would tell you, because these tantric deities are very greasy, you know, and sometimes they don't admit to anything, right? So anyway, you don't know who's seen it. But suppose you haven't, then your whole life has been spent in Kunzop reality. Kunzop means deceptive, false, okay? Deceptive reality, okay? False reality. So there's ultimate reality and there's false reality. Ultimate reality is called Dundam. See Dundam here? Okay, say Dundam, Demba. Dundam, Demba. The word for ultimate reality in Tibetan is ultimate truth. Demba means truth. Dundam, Demba means ultimate truth. Okay, the word in Tibetan for ultimate reality is ultimate truth. Okay. The word for what I call Kunzop or deceptive is deceptive truth. Okay? Deceptive truth. This pen is deceptive truth. This arm is deceptive truth. This room is deceptive truth. Your body is deceptive truth and your mind is deceptive truth. And if you haven't seen emptiness directly, you have spent your whole life in a world of lies, in a world of illusion. You've never seen anything correctly. You're living in its deceptive reality. Okay? A deceptive truth. Why do they call it truth? Why do they call it truth? Why don't they just call it deceptive reality? You got to get used to that. All right? They talk about the two truths. It means the two realities. So why do they call them truths? You know, by the way, two truths, when I say two truths, you have to think, oh, he's talking about the two realities. One of them I've been in my whole life. The other one, if I could make direct contact with it for 20 minutes, I would be out of here, you know. I'd be in a different place altogether, you know. So what's he talking about? When he talks about two truths, you have to think, oh, he's talking about those two realities. Which one? Oh, the deceptive one I've been in my whole life, and that ultimate one that if I could touch it directly, if I could make direct contact with it, then it would change me forever. And I would be out, I would see all my future lives, I would see my future enlightenment, I would meet the Buddha, etc. Okay, the 16 wonderful things happen to you called the Four Noble Truths. Okay, that's what Four Noble Truths means. Okay, anyway. But in Buddhist philosophy, they're called the Two Truths. Okay, why is deceptive, if I say deceptive reality, which is all around you, everything about you, and everything in this room is deceptive reality, why do they call it truth? Why do they give it such a fancy name if it's a lie? It's like saying, you know, true lies. You know, why give it credit and call it deceptive? Yeah. Say again? Scott said because it functions, it works. What were you going to say? Because it feels so real. And he said because it's not non-existent. That's three interesting ideas, okay? One person said it's true because it works. And that's true. The first one, that's not why it's called truth, but it's an interesting idea, okay? It does work. The pen works, your shirt works, your mind works, your legs work, they're going to take you out the door when I finally let you go, Okay? I mean, everything works. It's something deceptive about it, but it works. Okay? So that's not bad. To say it's truth because it exists, that's not too bad either. I mean, it does exist, right? You can't say it doesn't exist. You go stand in front of a deceptive truth car and see if it breaks your deceptive truth legs and gives you deceptive truth pain in the hospital, and you get a deceptive truth bill, you know. you know what I mean? It works. It really does work. It may be something funny about it, but it works, right? Actually, Kay's answer is the correct one, okay? It's called truth. By the way, where did I find this? We had some special books input. We're doing this computer project. We're putting in hundreds of thousands of pages of text. We just got a shipment yesterday. So I was checking it. Did they say anything about the two truths? And it's Trijang Rinpoche's collected works, which is Rinpoche's root lama and the teacher of the current Dalai Lama. And there it is. Beautiful. You know, two truths. Here's why they're called truth, you know. And deceptive truth is... So now it's in your homework already. So you can credit all those people working in the basement at Fifth Street, in the dungeon, yeah. But anyway, it says deceptive truth is called truth because you think it's true. It seems to be true to a mind which is wrong. It seems to be true to a mind which is wrong. And that's why it's called, that's why deceptive reality is called deceptive truth. It's a fancy way of saying it's a lie. Okay? It's true to a mind that doesn't understand things correctly. You know? Pink two-headed elephants are truth to a very drunk person. That's like saying that. Okay? That mind, your state of mind now, is wrong all the time. What you see doesn't exist the way you think it does. You know, you think those roaches exist from their side. So you kill them because you want to get rid of them. But you don't understand that why they're there has nothing to do with killing them or not killing them. And if you kill them, it's the best way to get more. You just can't see that. When you look at a roach, you don't think that. It wasn't like the first caveman that was, you know, whoa, and he looked at something to kill and he said, oh, wait, it's empty. It's a projection of my own mind, you know. Don't kill it. You know, we started killing because it looked like it made food. Does it make food to kill? No. Why? Because it doesn't work all the time. It's very interesting. I mean, if you really found the way to make food, it should work every time. Okay? Every time you go out to kill something, you should kill something. And every time you kill something, you should be able to eat it. Okay? If killing made food, then killing would always make food. Because killing is the cause of food. But it doesn't work every time, so it's not the cause. Wake up! You know? Come on, man. You know, can't you see that? If lying was the cause of getting money, then everybody who lied would get money. But it only works part of the time. So that's not why you get money. Something else is going on. Okay? If you kill all the roaches, sometimes they go away, and sometimes they don't go away. So it's obviously not the way to get rid of them. Wake up. You know, wake up. This is causing all the suffering in the world, is that. It's very interesting. It's very terrible. And it's obvious that it doesn't work. You know, if you had half a brain, you can see it doesn't work. You know, invest with risk or invest conservatively. Which is better? Neither one, obviously, you know. Obviously. It's generosity always works. Okay, now how you can confirm that is another matter. Okay, we get to that. We'll talk about that. Anyway, so it seems to be real in a certain way, and it's not like that. But your mind is always in the background of a human mind. Until you see emptiness directly, you believe in that thing about the roaches. You know, you believe it. And that's a wrong idea. And that's why that reality is called a lie. Is it a lie from its own side? No. If you put a Buddha in the room and showed him the same roach, would he see a deceptive thing? Would it fool him? No. Okay? Deceptive reality means deceives the minds of stupid people. You see what I mean? Like a Buddha can walk in the room and see the roaches and say, oh, don't you want to get rid of them? Take care of them. You know? He is not deceived by the appearance. So deceptive reality, it's named truth because it seems to be true to people who haven't understood things yet. And that's where it gets its name from. Does it mean when the Buddha sees this pen that he doesn't understand that it doesn't come from a pen factory? It comes from your good karma. If you like all this stuff I'm writing, if you don't like me writing so much, this pen came from your bad karma. And it's possible that one pen could come from one person's good karma and one person's bad karma. No problem. Because two people in this room, one can feel like, I wish that pen would run out of ink now. And the other one can think, I hope he writes more, you know. Okay? Yeah. I'm sorry, say again. If he saw a roach, he would still get incredible bliss. He or she would have an incredible feeling of bliss from this. I mean, that's a quality of being a Buddha. They might see a roach. Actually not. They would see the roach as a 10th level bodhisattva. Seriously, okay? That's true. Okay. So, what's the homework say? Name the two truths. Deceptive truth and ultimate truth. Kunzok Denpa and Dundan Denpa. Okay. Are they actually two different kinds of truth? By the way, why is ultimate truth called truth? For a different reason, right? Deceptive truth is called truth. This is Chidan Rinpoche, okay? This is ACIP data shipment yesterday. Why is it called... one of our sponsors is here tonight, so I'm just trying to advertise. Why is it called deceptive truth? Because it seems to be true to a mind which is mistaken. Okay. Why is ultimate truth called truth? Because it's ultimate reality. It is the ultimate truth. It is the higher reality. And if you make contact with it for 20 minutes, everything's over. Okay. So one is called truth for one reason, because it seems to be true to a stupid head, all of us. And the other is called truth because it really is ultimate reality. Okay. Are they actually two different kinds of truth? Is deceptive truth and ultimate truth, are these the two great divisions of truth itself? I ask you. No, one is a lie. Okay, one is false. Okay, so don't write that on the homework. Are they different two kinds of truth? No. If not, why are they called truths? Well, one of them is called truths because to a mistaken mind, to ignorance, to jikta, to the view of destruction, it seems to be true. Although it's not. It seems to be that if you kill those roaches, you can get rid of them. Okay? It seems to be that way, so it's called truth. Why is it called truth? Why is ultimate truth called truth? Because it really is true. It is ultimate reality. Okay? What object is divided into the two truths? If I say this thing has two divisions, deceptive reality and ultimate reality, what is this thing? All existence. Okay? Everything that exists is either on one side or the other. Okay? Everything that exists in the universe is either one reality or the other reality. It's either the lower reality or the higher reality. Okay? That's all. Are we dividing truth into two kinds of truth? No. We are dividing existence itself. We are dividing reality itself into two kinds of reality. Higher reality and a lower reality. What's the higher reality? Ultimate reality. What's the lower reality? Deceptive, so-called, lying truth. Okay? Like that. All right? And those are the two realities. One more point and I'll come to you. And then we're done, actually. I mean, you have been in the lying reality for your whole life. According to the highest schools of Buddhism, Majjhimika Prasangika, you have never had a correct perception in your entire life. Okay? You have, in the back of your mind, believed that thing about the roaches, about every single object you've ever looked at. And you look at 65 objects per finger snap According to Buddhism, you have 65 separate perceptions every finger snap. 65 times 1 second, times 60 seconds, times 60 minutes, times 24 hours, times 7 days, times 52 weeks, times however many years you've been alive, that many wrong perceptions you have had. Okay? Everyone was mistaken. And on the day you make contact with ultimate reality, you will understand that. You say, my God, that was a lot of boo-boos. You know? You know? Seriously, I mean, it's one of the Four Noble Truths. You see it. So that was what was wrong. That's what I was doing. Okay. By the way, the ironic thing is when you come out of seeing emptiness directly, you go back to seeing things wrong. Seriously. Until you reach nirvana. But you know what's going on. You know you're doing it. And that's a big difference. Okay. That's what the fourth path is all about. Until you get to nirvana, you're trying to get rid of that tendency. At least you know you're crazy. There's a difference between being crazy and knowing you're crazy, right? All right, big difference. If after you see emptiness directly, you know you're making a mistake. Okay, but you still do it. You can't help yourself. Okay, and then you're trying to get over that. Okay, did you have? I'll answer a few questions, and then we'll try to stop within about 6-7 minutes. Okay. Yeah. Everything belongs to one or the other. Yeah. Robin said a true point, and in fact, it's the next debate in Master Shanti's text. Every object in the world possesses both kinds of reality. Okay? Every object in the world possesses both kinds of reality. For example, this pen has a quality of appearing to be out there independent of your mind, and that's its deceptive truth reality. But it also has a reality of not being that way in reality, and that's its ultimate reality. In other words, every object in the universe has its own emptiness, and you have to get used to that. Okay? Every object in the world has the fact that it is not your projection. You got to get used to that. Okay, we'll go through that later. I didn't want to get into it just yet. But every object has both realities. There's a famous saying in Madhyamika that if you took away one reality, the other one would have to leave. Okay? It's a big debate, you know. But if you took away this reality, there wouldn't be any ultimate reality. Because ultimate reality is a quality of each object in this room. Okay? How many emptinesses are there around you? How many ultimate realities? We're trying to make 20 minutes contact with this guy called ultimate reality. How many available guys are there around you? I mean, every hair of Dr. Sykes' stubble has its own emptiness. You see? Every object in this room, every scratch on the wood has its own emptiness. You are surrounded by ultimate realities up to the gills, you know? You haven't ever seen one of them. Directly. If you could ever see one of them for 20 minutes, you'd be out of here. You know? But it's like a big wall of pure diamond. You can't see it. Okay? It's like a big wall of perfect crystal, and you can't see it. It's around you all the time. You live in it. You swim in it, and you can't see it. Okay? It's pretty weird. Okay? Yeah. I love that question. They always put like some tantric deities in the class, and they ask the questions that I forgot to cover. Some people call deceptive truth relative truth. That's just a lousy translation, and I'm not ashamed to say it. It's a crummy translation. The word has nothing to do with relative. Zop means fake. Kun zop means fake. Lie, false. Okay, the relative, I don't know where they got it. You know, if anything's relative, emptiness is relative. Okay, because it's dependently originating. But that's another question. Okay. It's a lousy translation. I don't know where they got it. You know. Maybe it's the opposite of ultimate in some people's mind or something. Yeah. 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 And because you have what? Right. Fran said, suppose you come out of the direct experience of ultimate reality. And I just said, you're still seeing things wrong, but at least you know you're seeing things wrong. It's the understanding that builds over the next seven lifetimes about what you saw that allows you to eliminate your mental afflictions. Are you able to stop bad karma immediately? Not at all. It is not a tongpang. Saying tongpang? Tongpang? Tongpang means something you eliminate immediately when you see emptiness directly, and you will never have it again. And there's only two or three of them. One is doubt. You will never doubt Buddhism again. You know, frankly, Buddhism is the only true religion. Sorry. You know? And you will see it directly. You will meet a Buddha. You will see your future lives. You will see emptiness. You will see that you're going to be enlightened. All those books that are being typed in by those poor monks are absolutely, every letter is true. You know, and on that day you confirm it. And you never doubt anything about it again. You will never wonder about it again. You'll never have the least question in your mind again. You will see it all with your own eyes. And you know that you're seeing it. That's another thing. So there's no doubt. By the way, I'm not putting down other faiths. They're fantastic. They bring great happiness to the world. They're wonderful. You know, that was a joke, okay? Well, it's true, actually. It really is true. But what I'm saying is that I'm not making a joke. The other things, morality and the faith and those things, fantastic. They have kept the world together from blowing up for many years. But what I'm saying is on that day, you will confirm every single thing that I'm talking about directly yourself. And you cannot doubt it again. What's another one? What's another thing you eliminate on that day? You can never believe that things are the way they look again. Okay? They may look that way again, but you don't believe yourself anymore. You know emptiness is correct. You know this is an illusion. You know, you can never believe in it that way again. You can never really believe that the roaches exist from their side and not from your mind. And you can never really again kill them as happily as you used to. Will you still kill them? Yes. Because you haven't overcome your mental afflictions yet. But at least you know you're wrong. You know, but you still have this impetus from your past, that you will still do bad deeds. Bad deeds are not stopped at seeing emptiness. They slow down immensely. And then you have to use emptiness to get rid of them. The last thing you stop forever is believing that, like, cutting yourself or doing some kind of suffering thing could be a spiritual practice. After that, you know you have to take good care of yourself. You know that your body is very important. This is a lousy, crummy, mortal body, and you need it. So after that, you take good care of it. You know, you don't believe that it's a spiritual practice to starve it or to beat it or to get it cold or something like that. It's called sutim tushu chungjing dawa. You get rid of that forever. Okay, but you don't get rid of bad deeds forever. At that point, okay, you can still, because of the impetus of your past, you can still collect bad karma. Does it go off? Does it create new lifetimes? No. Will it ever flower? No. Very cool. Okay. That's another story. Yeah. She says, if you say when you become a Buddha, you see all the things of the three times, every object in the universe. But if everything is your projection, how can you see every object in the universe? Well, guess what? Every object in the world, in the universe, is your projection, and you see it. And by the way, you'll be sitting there and saying, oh, I'm seeing this roach as a 10th level bodhisattva. And that's because I was so good for so many years back in New York City, when after that class, I didn't hurt them anymore. That's cool. It's all a projection of my mind, and I really like it. You know, deceptive reality works. You can get run over by a deceptive reality taxi cab. But you can also sit there and enjoy your deceptive reality Buddha paradise. You know. And you know you made it, and you can just sit there and be proud of it. You know, that's okay. No contradiction. That's a very difficult question. You know, she says, can you see the suffering of other beings? Because you can't see anything bad, right? You can see that they are projecting suffering. Got it? You see what I mean? I can look at a person and say, tantric deity, nice to meet you. They can be experiencing themselves as a miserable person. You see what I mean? No contradiction at all, because they are empty. If they were not empty, that couldn't happen. Because they are empty, everything's possible. Okay? That proves why you can reach a Buddha paradise, by the way. And that's cool. And that proves why one person in a room can be knocking on the door of a Buddha paradise and everybody else is saying, this guy's crazy. This guy acts weird. You know, I don't know what's wrong with this guy. You know what I mean? Very possible. Completely possible. You know? In fact, it would probably look like that, right? So anyway, like that. Gentlemen? Okay, we'll stop. Pretty auspicious place to stop. You got something better? Now we have like 2 minutes. Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's another tantric deity there. Kunzo dani dundam de dini damanisudu. Kunzo means that deceptive truth, which you now know means, you know, reality as a plain old normal screwed up mind sees it. Okay. Kunzo dung means and. Ni is a filler to make meter. Okay. Dundam means ultimate reality, ultimate truth. Dame is a colon. So what he's saying is deceptive truth and ultimate truth. Dini, these. Demba ni. Demba means truth, meaning reality, right? One is called truth because to a screwed up state of mind, it looks true. One is called truth because to an enlightened state of mind or to an Arya state of mind, it's true. Okay? Ni means those two. Ni su de means we accept two truths. We believe there are two truths. We assert that there are two truths. Okay? De means I agree, I want, or that's my position. Okay? Let me make sure I covered all the homework. I ask you for some root text, which you'll find in your reading. And that's it. You're free on a time almost, okay? Again, I ask you this. This is a very profound chapter. It's going to get heavier. Okay? Hang in there. It's an extremely good opportunity. It's basically, in my mind, I mean, you can believe me or not, you basically have the choice of dying a regular old lousy death, and everything that you don't come to this class for, you lose anyway. Or come to this class and see if this stuff works. You know, see if it works. I say it works. And I say that if you learn it, you'll see that it works. And you can try it, and it'll work. And these things will really start to happen to you, okay? You can do it. You gotta put in some effort. If it was that easy, you probably would have already done it, okay? And if it was that obvious, somebody would have taught it to you already. But it didn't happen yet, and you're still suffering, and you gotta put in some effort. So don't be wimpy, okay? And don't let the lazy mind take over and say, oh, 3-4 hours of studying these weird scribbles, you know, I'm busy today. Forget it, you know, the busy thing you're doing is just death, you know. You'll just die, it won't mean anything. It'll be in that huge pile called worthless days of your life. And then there'll be this tiny little precious box of the 20 or 30 minutes of your life that really meant something. And you have to get to that peak experience. You can do it, but you have to put some effort into it, okay? And I'm not going to make it easier, because I want to give you what you need to know. I could make it really general and mushy, and nobody would perceive ultimate reality, you know. So we're going to go for that, all right? So buckle down and don't get wimpy, okay? All right. Sāshī-bhūti-jūshin-ne-tāśāṁ
This is the end of Class 1. You have been listening to A Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, Part 3, with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.